Jake Bentley chased and dropped the 15-yard line. Roquan, the chef, Smith.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClaren inside paint, 1-2. He did it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. Also on Snapchat. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back guaranteed. Just try to follow me at SnapJHood, see what happens. I bet you get a follow back. Try it. On the program this hour, we will hear from Malika Andrews, who covers the Bulls and the NBA for ESPN.com. We'll get her thoughts coming up at 9:35. We'll hear from Trevor Maddich, who covers college football for ESPN. We'll talk to him coming up in about 10 minutes from now, right here on ESPN 1000. The top 25 officially came out today. I agree with the top four, because I know everyone's focused on the final four. So we'll get into that with Trevor Maddich, also his thoughts on some of the weekend matchups. And speaking of college football, gotta tell you, did you know that ESPN 1000 has a college football show? I know. We do have a college football show. If you're a college football fan, we got you covered. Adam Abdallah, Chris Black, and yours truly, we take care of Chicago's college tailgate every Saturday before Notre Dame football. This Saturday we'll be on between 3 and 5 p.m. leading into Northwestern and Notre Dame, right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. So 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Chicago time, we're on with Chicago's College Tailgate, give you all the gambling information that you need. We update you on what's going on in college football as it happens, 3 to 5 into Notre Dame Northwestern, right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. Before we hear from Trevor Maddich, I wasn't going to do this, but I think that I just want to be able to give some thoughts about what's going on as far as the WWE and Saudi Arabia. Let's do a little Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday here.
Tuesday.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening for the Worldwide Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championship.
Wrestling.
Ladies and gentlemen, our first event of the evening is a one-fall match with a 15-minute time limit.
There ain't nobody in wrestling who can make me quit. And that's the bottom line, cause Stone Cold said so.
Tuesday.
We are what wrestling's all about. New York City here, Chicago here, JD on my left, Linda on my right. But I'm not telling any of the girls who I'm going to give it to in Chicago until that night.
Tuesday, Wrestling. Tuesday returns to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
All right, we're glad that you're with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Yes, throughout the summer, we do our Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday segment. Also, if we have a special guest, we like to slip that in as well with Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday, part of the Under the Hood podcast. One little wrestling note for you coming up in Chicago. And actually, he's going to be in Cicero on Laramie Avenue. MLW Wrestling will be coming to town for the first time with a television taping. Let me check the calendar here. On November 8th, they'll have their BN Sports cameras here so you can bring your signs. There's still tickets to give away at the Cicero Stadium in Cicero for MLW Wrestling, 7 o'clock on November 8th. So I think I'll be in attendance for that. Hope to see you there for MLW. Court Bauer was a guest on Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday. You can listen to that interview in the archives of the Under the Hood podcast. Want to hear more about MLW Wrestling? Court Bauer does a great job breaking that down, the CEO of Major League Wrestling. The reason why I want to take these few minutes before we hear from Trevor Maddich is Tim Fioravanti, who's been on the program, by the way, before talking wrestling with us. If you go to ESPN.com, there's a WWE page. And he talks about how John Cena will not take part in the WWE's Crown Jewel event on Friday in Saudi Arabia. Now, the WWE has been there before to Saudi Arabia. After being advertised as being part of the show in recent weeks, Cena was quietly removed from the match as part of Monday night's broadcast of WWE's flagship show, Monday Night Raw. Bobby Lashley, who joins Kurt Angle, Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, Seth Rollins, Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, Rey Mysterio, they're all going to be part of this show that's happening in Saudi Arabia. Now, the reason why that I even bring this up is because the WWE is moving forward with Crown Jewel despite the ongoing investigation into the death of a Washington Post journalist on October 2nd that took place in the consulate in Istanbul. In a statement, the WWE said, "As always, we maintain an open line of communication with our performers and will address each situation accordingly." And in a conference call that took place with Vince McMahon, who is, you know, Vince McMahon, right? He's the CEO of the company. They had their quarterly financial report, and Vince said, "Well, it's kind of a sticky subject, a sensitive subject. I don't want to talk about it." What do you mean you want to talk about it? I mean, there's a lot of controversy about these American and actually international wrestlers going to Saudi Arabia despite what is going on as far as that journalist from the Washington Post missing in that country, in Saudi Arabia. But yet, there are certain people that feel a certain way about that. I know that that's uncomfortable. There's and very disheartening that there is an American journalist, or American of any, doesn't matter what vocation he's in, he's in Saudi Arabia and he's been captured and missing, but yet the WWE is going to move forward and have this event. Well, I mean, there is some wrestlers that have turned down the opportunity to go to this Crown Jewel event because of it. John Cena, for all practical purposes, still is kind of the face of the company, and he's like, "No, I'm not going because of what's going on here." And he has every right to. I'm glad that he stood up, though, and said, "I'm not going because this journalist is missing. It's a bad look for the company." But here's what it comes down to, as you know, in any sport, whether it's sports entertainment, which I'm talking about right now, or just sports in general, is it comes down to the almighty dollar. That's all that matters, is that if you're able to get paid. And it's the WWE is a billion-dollar company, right? I mean, they're a publicly traded company, but yet just missing out on the millions of dollars that they would get from Saudi Arabia from this Crown Jewel event that's going to take place on Friday. If they missed out on that money, are they going to be in trouble? No. They still have a lot of money, a ton of money. They have so many people employed. They have a billion-dollar contract with Fox next fall, along with their contract they already have with the USA Network. They could have drawn a line in the sand and said, "No, we're not going to this because there's an American that has been captured over there and there's something going on." But no, for Vince, it's all about the almighty dollar. He's just going to go ahead and just do this event. And you know why? Because it's about money. He could be able to draw in any football stadium across this country and be able to make a good dollar and still be able to draw a ton of people, despite that watered-down, above-average product that he's running right now. But yet, he wants to go to Saudi Arabia because of how much money has been doled out there to him. I think that's a bad look for them. I do. There will be some that will look at what Vince is doing and say, "Well, a publicly traded company, and look at the deal that they struck with Fox." And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Is there any morality anymore? He can go anywhere else in the world and be able to draw the type of money and the type of attendance that he's going to do in Saudi Arabia. But for Vince, that's not what it's about. So there you go. One other note before we hear from Trevor Maddich is that the WWE just had their all-women's pay-per-view event, where it was all women's wrestling that took place in Uniondale, New York on Sunday. I did not see all of it. I saw some of it. I think for a lot of people are saying that it's probably one of the best events they've had all year. When you consider it was all women's event, I'm happy for those women. I think that this is not the first time that we've seen an all women's event. I mean, there's been a number of promoters that have done this before, but I guess in the WWE scale, the way that they have really They have not respected women for such a long time in that company, especially during the Attitude Era in the 90s. Now they're starting to realize that, yeah, these women are, I don't know, athletes. They also can entertain. They can also put butts in seats. They're more than just what Vince considered eye candy or those that could be in mud wrestling matches. They actually are very good athletes. And so I'm just glad for those women that they were able to perform an all-women's evolution event that's on the WWE Network. So I saw a few matches from it. It was pretty good. I'll probably watch the rest in the next couple of days. But good for them that women are just not valets. They're not just to be in mud shows. They actually can perform. All right, and that is our Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you're with us here. Jonathan Hood with you. Don't forget to hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. Also on Snapchat, SnapJHood. College football. I mentioned Chicago's College Tailgate every Saturday. We are able to give you Chicago's College Tailgate. Adam Abdallah, Chris Bleck, and yours truly. We have a fun time doing that. I want to tell you about this weekend's matchup with Northwestern against Notre Dame. If you don't get with your buddies someplace and sit down and watch that matchup, that's going to be a 6:15 Central Time start for that one, Northwestern and Notre Dame. I give Northwestern sometimes a hard time because I always think that they should be a lot better. I always think that they can strive for more. But I will give Coach Fitz a lot of credit that he is able to do a really good job with that program. You think about Northwestern and you look at the Big Ten and look what they've been able to do over the last year plus, winning games, especially on the road. I give them a lot of credit. I didn't like how they played early in the season as they lost against Akron, as they lost against Duke, but I really like what they've been able to do so far. Winning games out of nowhere. So I give them a lot of credit. Now this matchup against Notre Dame, a game that you can hear here on ESPN 1000 starting at 6:15. Man, that's a big test for Northwestern. Huge test for Northwestern. They've had some injuries, the Wildcats, but boy, this is, you talk about trying to figure out who you are as a team. Taking on Notre Dame, and boy, the difference in Notre Dame over the years. Think about Notre Dame earlier last year, like around September of last year. Notre Dame takes on my Georgia Bulldogs. It was about 60-40, probably even more than that, because I was there in South Bend. And I'm watching these Georgia fans take over South Bend. Red hats everywhere. And maybe it was just some Notre Dame fans that were kind of selling their tickets. But I just know that it didn't look like the program was going to go in the right direction. It didn't look like Brian Kelly was going to stay. And I think they turned things around in a big way after that game, to the point where now look at them this year. They make a quarterback change. Ian Book is a quarterback for this Notre Dame Fighting Irish team. And boy, he has really paid dividends for this football team. They really have. Both sides of the football, Notre Dame is playing great football. And so now they take on Northwestern. That should be a very interesting matchup. Something else, too, I want to point out. We're waiting for Trevor Maddich to pick up. And as we wait for him, I see here that if the playoff ended today, this is what it would look like. Alabama would be the number one seed. Clemson would be number two. LSU number three. Notre Dame number four. Number five is Michigan. Number six is my Georgia Bulldogs. And I have really no problem with those six. I do have a problem with this, though. If you're a longtime college football fan, you do recall watching the Cotton Bowl, watching some of the best bowl games that are out there, the Peach Bowl, watching some of these high-profile games in the past, and that everything wasn't necessarily about the national championship game because there was a lead-in to it. You would watch all these different bowl games. And I know that there are some that will complain about college football today because there's so many bowl games. Can I tell you something about this? For those that complain about how there's too many bowl games, and it's, here's looking at you, Fred Huebner, and those that complain about bowl games, you have to understand this. If you're a college football fan, you're going to watch your favorite team in that bowl game if they're able to get to a bowl game. Or you're going to watch some games that involve the conference in which your favorite team is involved in. when people complain that there are too many bowl games in college football, you know what I say to them? I say, you're just complaining because you just like to complain. As a college football fan, I love college football even more so than the NFL. For those of you that's been listening to me for a long time, you know how much I love college football. It's why I host a college football show. The idea that there's too many bowl games, you can just choose the bowl games that you want to watch. You know, and my point, and I'm going to talk to Trevor about this, I don't want the Final Four to be so huge that we forget about the pageantry and the love for college football, in which it's about the bowl games. It's about the Heisman Trophy. It's about these other things. It's about the individual trophies that's won in these rivalry games. College football is more than just the Final Four. It's about everything around it. As we turn to Trevor Maddich, who covers college football like a blanket, you can hear College Game Day every Saturday here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. And Trevor joins me, Jonathan Hood, here on ESPN 1000. Hello, Trevor.
Jonathan, I totally agree with you that the sanctity of the regular season in college football is one of the things that makes it awesome. I think we might see a little bit differently about how to handle the end of it, but that we never want to turn college football into the NFL by having a 16-team playoff or whatever it is in the NFL and just turn it into some big giant tournament at the end instead of at the beginning and in the middle.
Yeah, I guess my point was, Trevor, is that growing up watching college football, you playing college football, it was about those individual rivalries between two teams within your division. It was about who can get to a high-profile bowl game. We have so much discussion about the Final Four that, you know, on podcasts and on college football shows, that's the central of the universe. And to me, college football is more than that.
And you know what? Nick Saban agrees with you. Nick Saban has said publicly that he has lamented the idea that conference championship races are now interesting sideshows to a regional audience. And all anybody really cares about is, did you make the playoff or not? And you can win your division, you can win your conference, but if you didn't make the playoff, it was a failed season. That's sort of the perception now. And I agree with the both of you that it's unfortunate because we lose so much of what makes college football great when we subordinate conference races to one big national picture.
The top 25 came out. Any issues you have with the committee's decision?
No, I don't have a problem. I mean, I had the same top four, but I had Notre Dame at three and LSU at four. I think Notre Dame is more balanced as a team because I like their offense better as it sits right now, but that's splitting hairs. I think they're fine. The thing about this, though, is that as you look at it, you can see a lot of places where this thing is going to take care of itself. And I know that Notre Dame fans might lead the nation in angst, but it'll be fine. You know, they control their own destiny, and I don't think there's any reason to worry that they're number four and they might get jumped. They won't. It'll be okay if they win out.
Trevor Maddich with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. What surprises you about Notre Dame? Because I'm looking forward to Notre Dame Northwestern like we all hear here in Chicago. But what surprised you most about Notre Dame with them staying undefeated to this point?
You know, the fact that they were able to switch quarterbacks midstream. Ian Book has been playing really well. I've seen some headlines that he should not read because they compare him to some great quarterbacks, and he shouldn't read that. He should stay focused on the next game, the next play, the next rep in the next drill, you know, so that he continues to do the things that have gotten him to this point. But what he's done is enabled the other playmakers on offense better than Brandon Wimbush could. He runs okay, not as well as Wimbush, but he gets the ball out more quickly to a wider variety of receivers. And because he gets it out more quickly, they have a chance to make a move. And you see bubble screens, for example, that basically a receiver will catch the ball and drag a defender for 4 yards with Wimbush because it comes out a bit slower. With Book, it comes out a bit quicker. That receiver has a step, and sometimes he makes that first guy miss and takes off for a 30-yard gain. And these are the kinds of things that he's done. Now, you combine that with the return of Dexter Williams. You combine that with a defensive line that can rush the passer. I mean, when they're healthy, they've got four individuals on that D-line that can each rush the passer at a next-level capability. And they all play at the same time sometimes in certain looks. And that's what you need if you're going to match up with somebody like a Tua Tagovailoa. Because you've got to pressure him without having to blitz. And Notre Dame is one of maybe three, maybe four teams in the country that have a chance to do that. So I think Notre Dame, if the season were to end today, they and Clemson would be the best matchup for Alabama.
I'm also looking forward to Penn State against Michigan, Trevor, coming up at 2:45 Central Time. I'm looking forward to that matchup. I'm wondering how you look at the one-loss teams. Is it Michigan or is it Georgia? Who impressed you most as far as teams with a one-loss record?
You know what, Jonathan? They're both impressing, and they're both – they give me pause for the same reason. Their offensive lines are both still a work in progress. The advantage that Michigan has over Georgia from that standpoint is that with Shea Patterson at quarterback, they've got the ability to call plays that are both pro-style and college-style. Jake Fromm is not going to be a threat to run. He's mobile enough, but he's not going to do a whole lot of zone read, where Shea Patterson can. Now, Michigan's offense still is pro-style. It's not that they've shifted over. But they can now go with the various zone reads and options with a very credible running threat at quarterback. And then go back to the pro-style and toggle back and forth depending on what kind of defense they're facing. And keep this in mind, that the reason, well, one of the reasons that the up-tempo spread zone read RPO offense made its way into college football was to help compensate for deficiencies elsewhere in talent or in size and strength, especially on the offensive line. So if your offensive line isn't big and strong enough to push around the big guys on the other side of the ball, well, you can run them into the ground. And if you can't block them all, well, you can option one of them. So you don't even have to block that guy. You can just option him if your quarterback can get it done. Do that at a high tempo, and it's an equalizer. Well, Michigan with Patterson has that ability to equalize, and it's helped their offensive line because in a straight pro style, the O-line just has to flat win. But now they've got some extra help with the college-style plays that are mixed in, and that's one of the reasons I think Michigan is on the rise.
I know that that you saw what was going on with Maryland today. What were your thoughts about the press conference, and did it ring hollow to you?
You know what? I think that Maryland did the hard thing, but the right thing has yet to be done. The easy thing would have been to fire their coach, DJ Durkin, clean house, start over. Then they wouldn't have to deal with any backlash of any kind. By deciding that the head coach is not responsible for the medical staff is. The head coach is responsible for oversight of the strength staff, but ultimately the strength staff is responsible for what they do. Well, the toxicity of what was happening in that weight room was addressed when they fired the strength coach. And what their commission decided was that while DJ Durkin did not have adequate oversight of that strength staff especially, he still was not the main person responsible for what was going on there. And so they decided that since he didn't deserve to be fired, they're not going to fire him. Well, that's a hard decision because of now the backlash. But what I think needs to happen going forward, and they may be right, but what needs to happen going forward and what I wish would have happened today is something that would have given both Maryland and Durkin the best opportunity to move forward. And that is for Durkin then to voluntarily resign. Because if they would have fired him, he would be toxic forever as a coach because a player died under his watch. By reinstating him, and then if he decides to resign, then he can say that he was mostly exonerated of every bad thing that was accused of him, but he decided it was best for Maryland to have another coaching staff to move forward. And then going forward, he would have a much better chance to rehabilitate his career somewhere else, certainly sooner. Think of what opposing recruiters will say now. There have been family members who have wanted him to be fired. Certainly the family of the player that died, Jordan McNair, said that they felt like they were punched in the gut and spit in the face when Durkin was reinstated. You've got reports of players walking out of a meeting that Durkin was holding in disgust and for whatever other reasons that they did. How are you going to recruit to that? How are you going to get by what negative recruiters are going to say? I mean, I just don't see how they could continue the upward trajectory of the program. And so I really think that it would have been better for everybody for Maryland to have found what they found, and I accept what their commission found, and then for Durkin to say, look, this is better for the family of Jordan McNair and for the Maryland family in general to not have to make this case, to not have to fight the negative recruiting and voluntarily resign. not because he should have, but because it gives Maryland and him the best chance to move forward.
Where's Radio Game Day on Saturday?
We are in Baton Rouge for Alabama at LSU. That means we'll have the best spread for lunch for our seven-hour show. We can't wait to get there. And I tell you, LSU and Alabama hate each other. They hate each other. I cannot wait to take in that atmosphere, man. It's going to be awesome.
And the food. And, of course, the food.
Well, the food, yeah. The atmosphere is a distant second to the food. But when you've got both, now you have a party.
I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be great. As always, Trevor, I appreciate your time here in Chicago. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jonathan. I always enjoy visiting with you.
It is Trevor Medich from ESPN with us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Yeah, the Radio Game Day will be there for Alabama LSU. Brad Edwards, Trevor Medich, and Matt Schick always do a great job of their coverage. And we have our coverage as well. From 3 to 5, we'll be on before Northwestern and Notre Dame right here in the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. All right, coming up next, we will talk some NBA with Malika Andrews, her thoughts about the Bulls and that disaster on the West Side. We'll talk to her about that. And also, the Milwaukee Bucks are still undefeated. Can you believe that? We will talk to her about that and more coming up next as you're listening to Under the Hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So glad that you're with us. We've been talking a lot of NBA tonight. And, of course, if we're going to talk NBA, we got to talk to Malika Andrews, who covers the league, the Bulls, and the NBA for ESPN 1000 and ESPN.com. She joins us here on ESPN 1000. Hello, Malika.
Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I need to know your initial reaction. Your initial reaction when you looked at your computer and saw the first half that the Warriors scored 92 points. I know you saw this on your Twitter feed. It had to pop up.
I did. Mean,
what was your first reaction?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we passed the computer with the box score on it around the media row. I was in Milwaukee for the Bucks Raptors game, and it was one of those things where you had to hit refresh. Is that real? Is that actually the score that's going on right now in Chicago?
I mean, it was amazing because when you think about the Splash Brothers, both Clay and Steph, and how great that they are. I mean, you covered locker rooms for a long time. I mean, after yesterday's loss at the hands of Golden State, I mean, how low could the Bulls be right now to allow that many points, to allow that beatdown last night?
You know, I've been thinking about this and talking about it with a couple of people around the league, including some people within the Bulls organization today. And I think that on the one hand, you know, the Bulls, they are pretty beaten down at this point, right? I mean, they're without arguably their four best players. And so there's that. And I'm just going to set that over here to the right for a second. But State Warriors are, because I think there was not any real expectation going in that the Bulls were going to be the winners coming out of this game, right? But I don't think anyone kind of went in expecting to see what they did. And, you know, Clay has kind of been struggling a little bit lately, and he was bound to kind of, he's a fantastic shooter, so he was bound to sort of hit his stride eventually, but I don't think anyone thought it was going to be in that big, spectacular way that he did against the Bulls. And, I mean, that hurts. That hurts anybody, any team, especially a team that's kind of down and out right now when that happens.
Is there any word about the core of the team being able to come back? Because ultimately, you want to see, if you're John Paxson and Gar Foreman, what does LaVine, Dunn, and Markkanen look like on the floor together for a full complement of games? And now, once again, this season, you won't be able to. Have you heard anything about when a couple of these guys will be coming back?
Right. Yeah. So actually, I talked to some folks today, and basically, I mean, we're looking at Lowry. The early end of when he's going to come back is the mid to late November mark. But the thing about that, you have to remember, from what I've been told, is that's when they're ready to come back and be integrated back into like full basketball activities. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be the time when they are going to be back in full games at the capacity that they were before these injuries, right? So I've been told that to kind of play down expectations a little bit in that 4 to 6 weeks or the 6 to 8 week mark that was initially given for Lowry, because that's 6 to 8 weeks from when he can even kind of start resuming basketball activities, let alone reintegrate into a system that has sort of moved on without him, you know?
Yeah. Malika Andrews covers the NBA for ESPN.com. She joins me, Jonathan Hood, on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. I just think at this point, there's really no rush for marketing. If you're struggling the way you are right now, and again, my expectations for the Bulls are different than maybe Garn Pax, because I told Pax I think that this could be a playoff team, but the way that they're playing, and because the core's not there, I don't think that might not be the case anymore. So, I mean, there's really no rush for marketing, because he really is the linchpin to all this, is he not?
No. Yeah, there's no rush to bring him back, and I think, you know, right now he's at a point, it's always funny to me talking about rushing guys back, because there's a threshold of when you're ready and when you're not, and when it's irresponsible to bring someone back and when it's not. And I don't think the Bulls are in a position right now where they're looking to see, all right, how can we bring this one piece back, because they do have four out.
So what is it that the Bucks have that the Bulls don't? Because the Bucks have they got the formula right now, because they continue to be undefeated, as you covered them, as they are now 7-0 on the season.
Well, they have a Lopez brother that can make threes, so that's kind of the start of it. Wow. And Brooke was sort of teasing Robin about that the other day, but I think that the first thing they have is health, and obviously that was kind of tipped on its side with Giannis Antetokounmpo being placed in the NBA protocol before the game against the Raptors. But what that game proved, and not having him on the court proved, is that their system is so sound and so bulletproof that they can still play to win without their MVP candidate player in the lineup. And so I think that kind of right now they just have a more sound system that they have, you know, a bunch of guys that they can plug into, whereas the Bulls right now are sort of a leaking boat, and they're just putting people trying to stop the water leakage anywhere, even if they don't exactly fit, like putting Justin Holiday at the four, which isn't something that that's not his natural position, but it's like, all right, well, this is the best we have right now, so this is what we're going to do. So where the Bucks are in kind of the proactive mode, the Bulls right now are sort of in the reactive mode. It's okay, how do we stop the bleeding, sort of a deal.
Did you just hit me with a Titanic kind of parallel to the Bulls with that boat reference?
Your word's not mine. I've also never seen the full Titanic. It's so long.
You said leaking boat, so I'm thinking that you're saying
there are a lot
Titanic.
Of leaking boats over the course of history. just so you know, we haven't had the best track record with boats.
a lot of them in the NBA. that's for sure. So you saw the Bucks up close and personal, and what is impressive about this game, and this was going to be the marquee game of the night until Clay did what he did against the Bulls. Bucks and Raptors, even without Kawhi Leonard, even without Giannis Antetokounmpo, that I think that was a marquee matchup. But I think that says a lot for the Bucks, for them to be able to find scoring off the bench from Bledsoe, from Brogdon, from Middleton, who's a terrific small forward for them to still flourish offensively.
Right. And I mean, I think there was a lot of guys doing a lot of little things last night. You know, Thon Maker hit 2 3-pointers. And I think the thing that is going on with them right now, or the thing I know is going on with them, is that Mike Budenholzer is saying, shoot no matter what. If it doesn't go in the first time, like Thon was sort of in a slump early on, and he's been in a shooting slump all season, keep shooting, because eventually the shot will come. And that's proven to be true. And so they're kind of really sticking to that system, kind of through the ups and downs, the bumps and bruises, and it's yielding good results for them.
What'd you think of Toronto without Kawhi Leonard? You know, I thought that in the first few games I saw them this season, Malika, I thought, like, okay, maybe Kawhi Leonard being, I don't know, a top 10 player might have been the missing ingredient. Like, so Kyle Lowry's there, and I know that puts a spotlight on him without DeRozan being on the ball club, but I could see how that team is moving faster and looking much better offensively as well.
Right. I mean, last night, you know, Kyle said himself he didn't really have a great game, and that's kind of part of the reason why the Bucks were able to rout them so handily. But, yeah, I mean, Toronto, they do look like a formidable team. They were the other only undefeated team in the league until last night, and a part of that is certainly Kawhi, but another part, Kawhi has not played a game yet on the road. So tonight is that was their last game at home for a while before they go on this West Coast stretch. So now it's going to be really their first prolonged challenge this season, I guess is a way to put it, because they're going to be on the road. Kawhi's going to have to play there where he hasn't played on the road before yet this season, and they're kind of trying to be a little bit conservative with him, at least early on in the season, because he only played 9 games last year with that quad injury. And so it's still something that's in the making for them up here, but they definitely look like they're putting together something special.
You're going to start a franchise, and you need to choose Clay or Steph. Who do you choose?
That's hard.
No, it's not. You know why? Because it's just two choices.
I think it's Steph, but you know, they clearly both. I mean, if you start a team with Clay in the East and Steph in the West, or vice versa, those two teams may very well be ending up facing off against each other in the final. So, I mean, you can't really go wrong.
That would be so much fun.
the ultimate test of the modern day NBA shooting game.
The immovable object against the irresistible force. That would be so awesome. Think about that.
Now Clay. I feel like we're like Star Wars, Star Trekking it. We went from Titanic to the supernatural.
I think that'd just be great to see these two face off. That'd be, and then Durant's like, then he'll be tweeting and he'll be on Instagram like, what about me? What about KD? What about me?
From his real account or from a burner?
Yes. Yes. So, I'm glad you spent some time. This is, even though it's early in the season, Malika, there's still some interesting storylines out there in this league. I saw LeBron already pissed. He already is not happy after the loss against the Timberwolves. You just don't want to see me when I'm upset. Just like all of a sudden he's going to just go Bruce Banner on you. Now he's going to be mad. So it's interesting already in the league.
I mean, that's the thing about this league. I saw a tweet from our, you know, former colleague Mark Stein that said he was on an airplane yesterday when all of the stuff was going down. You can't be on an airplane for a couple of hours because you land and it's like, wow, the whole NBA world exploded in the several hours that I was gone. It's like, I'm afraid to take naps nowadays because I'm going to miss something even this early on in the season.
This league, you got to love the culture. There's always something,
this league.
Right? This league is crazy. Well, I appreciate it as always, Malika. Thanks for coming on the show.
It was my pleasure.
Malika Andrews, who covers the NBA for ESPN.com, joining us as you're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
From your hood to J-Hood.
I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted, I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Don't forget, on the Under the Hood podcast, wherever you download your podcast, look for my conversation with Sean Wayans from the famous Wayans brothers and sisters and family. There's 10 of them. So Sean Wayans is going to be at the Improv in Schaumburg this weekend. You'll hear the interview coming up. It'll drop at 10 o'clock right here on the Under the Hood podcast, wherever you download your podcast. Felix Reyes, we thank you. We thank Sean Davis on the other side of the glass. Our thanks to Malika Andrews, Trevor Manich, and Gerard Cherry. Felix, do you know the difference between the Cubs and the Red Sox?
Yes. One won the World Series this year, and the other one won it the other year.
That's correct. The Red Sox are the World Series champions. We got to start thinking about that here this fall into the winter, about what the Red Sox had that the Cubs did not, right?
Yeah.
So the Cubs did not have the hitting that they needed at the right time. Neither did the Dodgers, by the way. I'm wondering, is that window closed with the Dodgers themselves? But the Red Sox had just enough to be able to get past a team that had an ace pitcher, just like the Cubs have an ace in Lester, but they got past Kershaw, and the Red Sox win the World Series. So you got to start thinking about what else is needed for the Cubs for them to be in that stratosphere for the postseason. So Yeah, I mean, that series was so easy for the Red Sox. Was it 5-1, 9-6, they lost 3-2, they won. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty easy for the Red Sox. So, got to figure out, Cub fans, how do you get to that postseason level? How do you get to the World Series? Well, the Red Sox were able to do it with pitching, and they did it with timely hitting, especially when they needed it. All right, thanks so much for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000. Tomorrow's going to be Kristen Adams sitting in for me, so don't forget to download the podcast. If you missed any of our previous episodes, check it out. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. So for Felix and Sean, it's Jonathan. Talk to you next time. Another edition of Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Jonathan Hood.
And I got what it takes to rock the mic right, yeah.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Go ahead and bless him. Bless him. Bless him then.